further ado, I'm going to call to the stage the director of The Lion King, Mr. Jon Favreau. Next, we have Donald Glover, our Simba. And then, should we tell Edufor? Miss Alfre Woodard. Seth Rogen. J.D. McCrary. Shahadi Wright Joseph. Dr. John Connie. Hans Zimmer. Again, let's welcome back to the stage Le Boheme. He was a soloist in the opening and provided a lot of new talent. Also, Keegan-Michael Key. Lawrence Kasumba and Eric Andre.
I know.
Billy Eichner! Oh my gosh! Billy Eichner! Yeah. I don't know how I forgot your name. I'm so sorry, sir.
I play Timon and I'm very good in it.
Oh my god. I did not realize that.
Just saying openly, I was very defensive of your absence and kept saying I didn't miss Billy.
Yeah, no, they did. They did. Let's just go ahead and say it. There's 14 of y'all and I dropped the name. So there we go. I apologize. Billy, I feel so bad you're down there. Are you going to be mad at me now? I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm going to start with you, John, though, really, really quickly. I do want to mention this part. I know the reason why you came back to Lion King especially was because you felt you cracked the code in the Jungle Book. So what did you crack in the Jungle Book?
Well, Jungle Book, you know, I've been working on both these movies back to back for about 6 years, and all the new technology that was available, I had finally learned how to use it by the end of the Jungle Book. And at that point, with the team that we had assembled for it, all the artists, because a lot of attention is paid to the technology, but really these are handmade films. There's animators working on every shot. Every environment that you see in the film, other than actually there's one shot that's a real photographic shot, but everything else is built from scratch by artists. And we had a great team assembled, and then the idea of using what we learned on that and the new technologies that were available to make a story like Lion King with its great music, great characters, and great story seemed like a really wonderful, logical conclusion. And so that was something we set out to do.
And then how long did you work on the film? Because I saw the footage at CinemaCon 2 years ago, and then you slowly teased it out to the world, and it broke the internet with 224 million views in the first 24 hours when folks got to see what I got to see 2 years ago. So how long have you been working on this?
Well, I've been working about 3 years on this one, and a lot of them have been working for the same amount of time because they came in back when it was pencils. So it was a huge leap of faith for this fantastic cast we have. And of course, you know, musically, Le Boheme and Hans Zimmer, who were so involved with the first one, to trust that it can turn out well was a big leap of faith for everybody. And in many cases, they kept coming back and recording again and trying new things, especially with the comedy bits. So although this isn't like one of those things where I've been toiling away alone, it's been a huge raft of artists, people who were involved with developing the musical landscape of it, doing early recordings and coming in and contributing through improvisation, redoing scenes, rewriting scenes. So this team here isn't just a bunch of people that recorded one time as a music stand and come here for the press conference. These were all people who were collaborators and filmmakers along with me.
Excellent. And I mean, just look at the stage. Like, there's so many names up here. Everyone up here is so accomplished. You guys, I think, could be doing a ton of different things. Like, Donald, thanks for recreating your childhood in IMAX, because that's been great between Star Wars and Marvel and now The Lion King. That's pretty awesome. What about this Simba, though? I heard that you said that this Simba is different, and he gave you something that you didn't experience before that you wanted to bring to this version.
I guess John was really good about the circle of life being like having a major hand in it. I really feel that it's good to make movies that are global and like metropolitan in sense of just like the citizens of the world, like making sure that we talk about like how connected we are right now, because it's the first time we've ever really been able to talk to everybody at the same time. So I felt, yeah, it was just like a necessary thing. I felt like he was really good about talking about that very, very upfront at the beginning of it. He's like, we're gonna, this is what I kind of, because like he kind of did it in the Jungle Book too, where like the Jungle Book story is the same, but the idea of like, yeah, humans' tricks, their tricks are their power, and like they're, and they can help everybody. Switching that and like making the story the same, I think the same thing happens in this in such like a great way. Like my son like saw it last night and was like freaking out. He was like, he did an amazing job.
Yeah, I heard your son was very excited to like just be able to see it. Like what did you tell him going into it? You're like, just so you know, Daddy's Simba.
I didn't tell him anything. I really didn't. It's his favorite movie. So I was like, oh, I'll just wait until he gets there, but somehow he found out about it, but still didn't know I was in it. He was just like, oh, the one with Beyonce. And then during the movie, he's like, oh, Dad's in it too. This is great. Bonus.
Even your son, you're upstaged by Beyonce.
Yeah.
Fair. Chiwetel, this Scar is way more similar, I think, to the stage version of Scar, and I think that's kind of amazing because we get to see more of why Scar is Scar. And I just want to know, like, what was... like, was that what drove you to him? The fact that you get to show, you know, he's not just a villain. Like, I felt a little sympathy for Scar for a minute.
Yeah, good. Wait, good.
I mean, for a minute. I didn't love him.
I felt that, you know, it was just really interesting to go into that psychology, to really sort of try and uncover that and to look at it. I'm a huge fan of what was done before, obviously, like everybody else, you know, Jeremy Irons and just sort of really just going back in and exploring that character again from a slightly different perspective and seeing what was there. You know, it's such an incredible part to play and so complex and all of that. And, you know, having empathy, you know, not sympathy, but empathizing with the character and trying to understand them and trying to get underneath that, and such a rich, villainous character to play. It's a wonderful experience for me.
Yeah, and I think Alfre, with your character, she's kind of the Helen of Troy of The Lion King in a lot of ways, and we get to kind of experience that for the first time in this film, at least in the film version, because John, that came from a stage play as well, right?
Yeah.
So tell us about it.
It is called The Lion King, but everyone knows that the lionesses are actually the rulers, the protectors, the nurturers, the hunters of the pride. And so John was able to give us the space to be that. One of the first encounters I had with wildlife was maybe almost 40 years ago in a concert, and it was happening upon the lionesses, and you could hear the king in the distance. He was coming, but they were sitting and we were a little close to them. And I've never felt more afraid and more attracted at the same time. I think that is the mother thing in most women and in some men, is that, you know, at the same time you suckle, but you will eliminate anything that comes close to endangering those cubs. So I just sat in that and I did whatever John told me to
do. John, you created a VR game, right, for everyone to sort of play around with?
Well, we actually built, that was one of the big differences between this and Jungle Book. And Jungle Book, we were essentially using the same motion capture technology for performers and cameras as had been developed 10 years prior for Avatar. But towards the end of that, there was a whole slew of VR, consumer-facing VR products that were hitting the scene. And we started experimenting with it at the end of Jungle Book and realized that we could build this really cool system of filmmaking using game engine technology and this new VR technology. And so we essentially were writing code as we were going for a multiplayer VR filmmaking game And that way I could bring in people who don't have any background in visual effects. We would design the entire environments. We took all the recordings that we had from the actors. We would animate within the game engine. In this case, it was Unity. And the crew would be able to put on the headsets, go in, scout, and actually set cameras within VR. And whenever anybody visited, I would pop them into the equipment.
Did you all play the video game?
Yeah.
Oh, some of y'all.
Yes.
Everybody?
Yes. Awesome.
Okay, so JD, you grab mic, so tell us about the video game.
It's so cool. It's like watching your favorite movie, but everything, like, you're in it. You're in the movie. That's exactly what it was. You did an amazing job of this. So it's me and Jihadi. Mr. Favreau.
Yeah.
We put on the headsets, we had these little controller things in our hands, and
we could fly.
We could fly. It was like we were Zazu. We were birds. We were whatever we wanted to be. And we saw everything. We saw the Pride Lands, we saw Pride Rock, we saw the Watering Hole, we saw the Elephant Graveyard, we saw it all, man. And it was so cool. It was so cool.
I mean, after that ringing endorsement, when does this hit shelves? Because you just got like the best ad for this VR game. It needs to hit the shelves.
It's a very specific VR game that only works for making one movie. Yeah. But we built all the assets from it, and so there, we've been talking, I'm not sure where we're at, about different VR type experiences, because gaming and filmmaking, it's all overlapping so much. We're at a time with so much change and disruption. And I think the effort here was to keep the tradition, not just the tradition of the film and stage production that came before us, but the filmmaking tradition. Oftentimes when new technology comes online, it disrupts an industry. But with just a little bit of effort, we were able to build around the way filmmakers and film crews work. And so a guy like Caleb Deschanel, fantastic cinematographer who I've always wanted to work with, inviting him to do a very technically advanced film without any prior background in visual effects, and just saying, hey, we'll make it so that you could just make a movie as you would have made the Black Stallion. And let's bring you in, and having people like Rob Legato, who's a big part I can't really take credit for all these innovations. It was a whole team of people, Magnopus, Rob Legato, people from MPC. But once we set this up, you know, it's fun for them to see what it's like, but then we would actually have cameras driven in VR space by a film crew that was in a room about the size of this room, with dollies and cranes and assistant directors, script supervisors, set dressers. So we kept the same film culture and planted it using this technology into the VR realm. And so, although the film was completely animated as far as performances went, it allowed a live action film crew to go in and use the tools they were used to. And so part of what's so beautiful about the lighting, the camera work, the shots of the film is that we were able to inherit a whole career of experience and artistry from these, from our fantastic team. And I think it's nice to look at technology as an invitation for things to progress and not always something that's going to change the way everything came before. And I think there's a balance between innovation and tradition.
No, it's really amazing. Again, people are going to want it, so Disney, make it happen. I think I unconsciously wanted to separate Billy and Seth because I heard that you guys cut up every single time y'all get together, and maybe that's why I messed this up. But Billy and Seth, you guys robbed every scene last night and stole every scene last night. It was completely hilarious. I couldn't hear a lot of your dialogue because people were laughing over it. So I just kind of have to ask you guys, how much was you and how much did y'all just pull out as you were going through?
You want to start? Yeah, okay, I'll start.
Never
going to
understand.
Okay, it was a lot of improvisation,
right,
Billy? It was what was so nice. And we were actually together every time that we recorded, which is a very rare gift to have as someone trying to be funny in an animated film, of which I've done a lot, and you're often just alone in there. And I think you can really tell that we're playing off of each other. It's incredibly naturalistic feeling. And they really captured Billy. Like, that is what is amazing, is like, I would say, like, he essentially played himself on a TV show for years, and this character is more Billy than that character. Somehow. Which is, it's like endlessly, it's remarkable to me how, like, his character specifically makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah, they made me, I wish I was as cute in real life as I am in the movie. Like, the Timon they designed is so adorable. And I think the juxtaposition of my personality in that little Timon body really works. And yeah, I agree with everything that Seth was saying. It was, I can't imagine now looking back not being in the room together.
No.
Because
you'd be like this.
It's fine, I deserve it. It's
a little harder to have a great rapport.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, being able to rip off each other and really discover our chemistry together in the same moment. You can feel it when you're watching the movie. I had not seen the finished movie until last night, and I was shocked by how much of the riffing actually ended up in the movie. And I think it works, and I think it feels very unique to other movies in this genre, which can often feel a bit canned.
The fact that it has like a looseness applied to like probably the most like technologically incredible movie ever made is like what is like an amazing contrast that like it feels like people in a room just talking and then it's refined to a degree that is like inconceivable in a lot of ways, and that like that mixture is what I think is so incredible, and that's what John really like captured in an amazing way.
I'm going to ask one more question, I'm going to throw it to the audience. If you guys have questions, please raise your hand. They'll come over with microphones. I do have to ask this. I don't want to spoil it. I just want to know, there's an Easter egg, a Disney Easter egg in the film from Seth and Billy. Who came up with that beauty of a moment, if you will?
John Favreau.
It was John, yeah.
I mean, everyone has to see it. I don't want to tell anyone about it, but just know that John Favreau was...
There's a gag that references another Disney property in there. And I drew inspiration. They do that in the stage show. They threw in the joke about Frozen in there that must have happened after Frozen came on Broadway. And so we kind of doffed the cap to another live-action adaptation of a Disney animated classic in the film.
It was absolutely amazing. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and throw it to the audience, and the first one I see right here in the blue.
Me? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Chiwetel, everybody, it's just an astounding film. Congratulations. But Chiwetel, it seemed like you had really heavy lifting to do since Irons was so memorable and fantastic. Can you talk about making Scar your own, and the song that you did, and the emaciated look that they came up with for him?
Well, maybe John can talk a bit about the look and everything, but the, you know, obviously in so many ways, the original is just this extraordinary event, just so iconic, and so it's exciting to even get the opportunity to begin a journey like this, you know, and to go into any of these characters. And the part of Scar is obviously that extraordinary part to play. And, you know, in a way, you just, you approach it the same way you approach any other part, in a way. And you sort of, you identify with the character, you look at the psychology of the character, you place yourself into those circumstances, and that creates its own individual slant. And so, in a way, as much as I personally, absolutely with everybody else, loved the original. You know, you kind of make it your own and you create a sort of an individuality to it in that way.
Did you think about Iago?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I didn't think
you said, did you think of Iago?
Oh, yeah.
No, I didn't think of Iago, actually. I don't know if I thought of any of the Shakespearean characters kind of directly. I mean, obviously, it's an amalgam of so many, and in some ways, the pieces, you know. So, but maybe, you know, you're making me think now. I didn't specifically think about Iago, because Iago is so much more connected in a way to the corruption of love, very specifically, you know. Whereas Scar is so much more invested in power, which is totally different to me.
in the look.
Oh, wait, sweetie. Appreciate you, but that's like four questions. We're gonna move on. Yes, ma'am. Right here, in the blue. Well, congratulations, everyone. John, masterful job with this one. One of the things that impressed me most about The Lion King this go-around in this live-action version is how the emotionality truly comes from Hans's score, and most particularly, the orchestration. And hand-in-hand with that, the sound mix, John, because as lush and rich and majestic as the score is, we have the nuance of nature within the sound mix. So I'm curious how you went about opening up this score to really bring it home, and John, find that balance so we still get all the nuance of this world.
Well, John saw what Leber and I did. But there came a point in my life where somebody said to me, you can't hide behind a screen for the rest of your life. You got to go out and look people in the eye. And we ended up dragging an orchestra and a choir out to Coachella and doing Lion King live. And there was an energy about doing it as a performance and doing it live in that way that moved John, and actually, to be really honest, it moved me too, because it was great seeing all these amazing musicians really playing it as a piece, you know, as music, as opposed to, oh, we gotta do it, we have to be specific about a film cue. So I said to John, why don't we do it like this? Why don't we get all the greatest players, get my band, get the greatest players in the world, make a new orchestra here in Los Angeles, rehearse them for 2 days, and then really make it as if it was a concert. And we invited all the filmmakers that never get to come to the scoring sessions, you know, the DP and the editors and everybody, got them into the room, sat them in front of the orchestra, so the orchestra knew there was a bit of, you know, they had to live up to something here. And we just went for it. But I mean, one of the things, if you want to talk about Neos, the Neos comes from the very, very, very beginning and the very first idea, which was, I wanted to make a Disney movie that started off with a voice from Africa and the black. And that is really my friend Lebo M here, that something shifted, that everything shifted over into this continent. And with this voice, you know, I would invite you on a journey. That's all I was trying to do. Just, you know, come along and feel this other continent. And don't ever forget this continent. And when do we do this? We saw in 92 or something like that. What was sort of pertinent and important then has become somehow more urgent and more important. And, you know, David Attenborough has shown us, you know, where nature is going. And, you know, and when we did the original one, I mean, you know, it really was the political climate in South Africa was very, very tricky. It was so tricky, in fact, because I had a police record, they wouldn't let me go for those last sessions, and Lever went by himself, because everybody, there was a meeting at Disney, who would finish the movie when Hans got killed, you know, and I went, and I was appalled that they wouldn't let me go. I was appalled by the common sense people were showing, because, you know, you get so invested in something. But the way the movie sounds, I mean, the openness is partly, it's everybody, here's the difference between a normal movie score and this. Everybody who played in the orchestra, and it's a very special orchestra, knew the movie. So every note was played with intention. Every note was played with commitment. And I think that ultimately helps, you know, everybody. It's not just people reading things off a piece of paper. They knew the material. And the rest, you know, John's a really good director, but there's one thing that he keeps bringing to the party, constantly bringing, which is this man has a huge heart, and that huge heart constantly resonates within the music. And I think not just the intellectual John who's able to pull amazing things out of technology, but the emotional John brings so much to the score. You know, I mean, really honestly, I thank him for letting me lose, letting us lose.
Okay, well, I want to much, you're welcome. I'm going to go to the back right there. Somebody waving at me like this with fingers. Yes. Yes, right here. Yes.
Hi, everybody. John, I'm curious how you blended the actor's reference video with the more animal-like qualities of this sort of virtual reality computer animation.
So there were lots of steps to this process, and that's why it took so long, and that's part of why it was interesting over 3 years, because it was always different, each phase. In the beginning, it was pencils and voices. And then, you know, we always, to me, casting is that's the foundation of great cinematic storytelling. I didn't come from the tradition of visual direction. It's always been about storytelling and performance. I came up as an actor, and so when I have my foundation of you can't compromise one iota on cast. You have to get the best people you can, because they're the ones who are going to do everything. And we just built off of our cast. So it started with us just in a room, like a black box theater. It was like theater rehearsal. It really was like like what you would do when you grab the book for the first time and everybody walks around on the stage and you start to figure your character out. And I had them all performing together. We would get them in groups. We would have everybody mic'd so that the sound was usable for the film. And we would have them interacting with one another and improvising all the things that they've mentioned. At that point, we would take a radio play that we would cut from that, and we would shoot video on long lenses just to have reference of what they were doing with their faces. And we would give that to the animators, and the animators would take the choices that they made and interpolate it into what a lion would do or a hyena would do. Because if we just motion captured their face and put a human expression on the animal's face, I was concerned that would blow the illusion of it being a naturalistic documentary. We looked at a lot of the work that Hans had done, like Planet Earth 2, all of those Attenborough BBC documentaries, and how much emotion could be expressed without human performance, just through music and editorial and the stories you're telling. And looking at movies like Babe, that was inspiration for how we did Jungle Book. How much expression and emotion could come out of those characters without having human performance. And so that became, so it really fell in the animators' hands to try to figure out how to express their performances through the language of an animal's emotive language.
That's amazing. One of the things I noticed watching it last night was the authenticity of it, from everything from Dr. Connie, when Rafiki speaking Xhosa, like that was just such an amazing touch, I think. And when I look on the stage, we have black people from across the diaspora. We have black British, and Florence is from Germany. What do you think really resonates about adding that authenticity to the African part? I want Dr. Connie View to talk about that, because I know this was a very personal journey for you to do this film.
Thank you. Well, I first thought when John said about to play Rafiki, and I thought to myself, it happens in Africa. It's somewhere along the track of the wildebeest millions, moving from Kenya to Serengeti to Kruger National Park to Sotongwane down in the KZN. Therefore, it is an African story. And he was generous enough to allow me to be an African primate called Rafiki. And the wonderful thing about it, he said, we're almost the same age, we're both over 75. So we both lived, we both walked through that forest, we both created those footpaths and intertwined where the little rabbits and the animals go through. And we've seen life, we've experienced life. But watching it last night, I kept praying, please God, not another scar in Africa. We've gone through a terrible time. Let other people have scars. Not us now, it's enough for us. So that for me was the kind of resonance and relevance in everything I do. I always try to find myself within what I do. And I felt last night like a kid for a very long time ago, you know, to sit there and just be taken by the story and look at these animals. And I'm very grateful to you, John. He doesn't look like me. But he is like me, which is fantastic. And it's a story that I'm looking forward to a premiere in Johannesburg, where it will be full of all African people who are looking for something that is about them. We are sort of not at the level of entertainment that the Western world is. Everything we see on the play, in the screen, we read, we take scenes. We take that it speaks to me. And so wonderful to see how the Johannesburg South African audiences would say, what does it say to me? What does it make me feel? Why am I celebrating it? Is it humanity? Is it us? Is it our dignity? Is it our future? And is it what we want to tell our children? Because we're only 25 years in our democracy. I went to the American Embassy in South Africa and I understood you guys were celebrating 243 years of democracy and we ain't got it right yet.
Real quick on the authenticity, because we only have a few minutes left. Lin Wim, the song. I cannot talk enough about it. Four of you guys returned, yourself and Ms. Johnson. So talk about coming back to it and re-recording it and just getting back into the moment that you had in 1994 with Hans and with everyone else.
Coming back to The Lion King. It's very hard for me to say I came back. I've never left. and the greatest gift is to be able to re-enter a journey that's been in your life for 25 years and be able to be part of something that I initially thought was a setup that Hans won't talk about. I first met this man, we did a project called Power of One. This is like a family reunion for me. My elders here, Dr. John Kali, and I saw my sister Alfred. When this movie came out, we were busy trying to shut down the South African embassy in Beverly Hills. I was one of the rebels with Artists for the New South Africa with Alfred. And this movie came out after we did another movie called Power of One. And then transition between the old South Africa and the new was literally in progress. And everything that Hans says is actually true, that we were now recording this thing. There was arrests and all kinds of things happening in South Africa. So when Hans and them called me for this, I came in, and this is the first time since I left exile South Africa at age 16. I came in, there's 9 white people, and he's one of them. Because of Power of One and everything else, I thought I was going to be arrested. But it turns out I'm sitting in a room and we talk as we have worked with Hans, and the energy and the brotherhood here is beyond normal. We did this movie, Power of One, which then set the tone for how I look at Hans and he tells me a little bit about the movie. And I bring in a couple of singers because I know when I get a call, there's something about something that's creative that I'm going to do with Hans, we have a way of working. Then I see this and little drawings and I go into it and prepare to leave and I go back because something is missing. We created Ingonyama and Ingonyama because I'm just looking at this. And then I keep seeing this image of Mufasa coming out, and just as I was about to leave, I turned back and said, let me do one more thing. And I went, nah, and that was it. It was a demo. Then I went to South Africa to be part of the New Democracy and came back. And we tried a couple of times to redo that, it just never wanted to be redone. What you hear is actually one take. There's been one take 25 years later, and how blessed can one be that in the movie last night, I'm sitting and watching this thing, that one take we did because it was so natural and now it's going to outlive the previous 25 years. It's unbelievable.
I mean, that's how you create magic, is just one take.
Yes. And
you're the Jay-Z and of African.
So it's, yeah. So it's very hard for me to say I'm returning to The Lion King. I'm just blessed enough to be a part of a huge global family that Hans gave me a chance to be a part of, and I would build something that I've had to live with for the last 23 years on Broadway. And then I then came for the first meeting very much intimidated because now I'm used to white people. It turned out, and I've seen the Soweto riots, and I lived in South Central, so I know all riots. So at that point, I'm familiar with that. Now I came, it turns out it's the first director meeting, and I see John, and I'm like, okay, there's Hans. Okay, no, so I normally do this. I have my own white person.
Yeah.
But then I relax, there's Pharrell, there's everyone. And then when he starts the meeting, is what really touched me when John said, we are never going to compromise the authenticity of the original work. And that is so true, because not only is the new movie remain true to the original movie, but it's also remain true and respectful to the Broadway production. And I'm truly grateful as a South African and an African and an American, because I grew up here, who are blessed enough to be part of this amazing journey. And I'm still sitting, he's not tired of me. We fight a lot and we love each other too much. But I get to sit like this and say, I'm truly blessed to have a brother who has given me, and now we've gone around the world on the Hans Zimmer tour, and now who else has this type of opportunity to start the next 25 years in advance?
That's great. I love that. That's amazing. Thank you so much. You guys are like couple goals. Like Timon and Pumbaa are couple goals. Y'all are couple goals. And
yeah.
I'm gonna say I'm gonna say to my hyenas down there, you guys are kind of like that couple that needs to break up, but they don't know they need to break up. But everyone around them knows.
We're in a very toxic relationship. That we try to hide from our leader. It's like she's the boss and also our therapist.
Yes.
I'm not going to tell you the truth in this session.
How did you get that dynamic? Because it is so different from the Timon and Pumbaa relationship.
We were pretty drunk the entire time. I mean, John got us liquored up. It was pretty. We didn't want to, but...
Right, and then all the real pure animosity came out.
He's incredibly talented and really, really easy to work off of. And he is a selfless, altruistic talent, which is rare. So I was in good hands. I was in great hands with John. So I don't know. It just was a very nurturing environment. It made it very easy because I'm very, very sensitive. So the slightest wind
of any kind of
will make me tear up.
I think a lot of... John is a great student, has an encyclopedic knowledge of all different types of comedy, and one of those pieces of knowledge is about comedic duos and the dynamic that exists between them. And I know that when we had a very similar experience to Billy and Seth, where we were allowed to walk around the room, it was as if we were being directed in a scene in a play. And as he said, we were all mic'd, and so everything was captured. And then it was the subsequent rounds that I thought was interesting, right, John, that would get a little more technical when I would be actually by myself. So I think I had two with you and then two by myself. And the refinement is also very fun because we would sit there and I'd have the headphones on and I would say to John, I'm like, now are we looking for Fibber McGee and Molly here or Abbott Costello? What are you looking for? He goes, I'm actually looking for a little bit of Laurel and Hardy with an explosion at the end, but then back it up into a little Apatowian for me.
So the script with Beavis and Butthead, which is a soupçon.
A soupçon.
I mean, you're a chef in everything that you do. Like, you really are. I love this. Florence, I have to talk about your character because I lived for her last night. I really, really, really did. I think hers was probably, everything was great, but you were the biggest upgrade in my opinion. I loved what you were able to do with her because she was fierce. Let's talk about the fierceness of you bringing, I don't know, talk about it.
Well, I was lucky that I got to play the part already in Germany for more than a year, and we played like 8 shows a week. So when you tell me who is Shenzi, it's like muscle memory because I got to play her every day. But this Shenzi is so different. I remember in the musical, we had sometimes shows where I was embarrassed because the hyenas are so dumb and funny, and they are entertaining, but this is so different, this experience, because when I listened to the dialogue or when I read them, I realized that this is way more dangerous and more serious. I was lucky that my first day that I was in a black box and I was working with Eric Andre and with JD, and we were very physical because the guys were so strong. It was easy for me to just be big, and because everybody's very confident, we could just really try out things. We could walk around each other. We could scare each other. We could scream, be loud, be big, be small. And it's like working in a theater, which I love. So having that freedom just made me, or I was allowed to do whatever I wanted to, you know?
Jason, sorry to cut you off, but being in the theater, like, she was all in, what she was saying, like, she was like, I don't know what she said, but I'm gonna just.
Lawrence, you're lovely, but was it a little scary? Just a little bit?
For
who? Yeah, for you guys.
Oh, like, yeah, sure.
I'm still scared of her.
I love you, Florence. And then also, by the way, Florence, everyone's had a great couple years, but let's talk about it. Wonder Woman, Black Panther, and then The Lion King, sis. That's a pretty good, like, repeat right there. Shahadi, too, also was in the stage play, did Young Nala, and now you're also doing Young Nala in this one, and you have every black girl's dream. You share credit with Beyonce, Carter Knowles, so, like, we'll love life. So what was it like doing both versions, the stage and, you know?
It was amazing doing both, and it was such an honor doing the stage play on Broadway and also doing it in the all-new Lion King. And one thing that I really saw the difference was that on Broadway, everything's a little bit more structured. I feel like maybe Florence, you probably felt that as well. And you kind of just have to, like, follow direction, which is cool, too. But also, you know, in the all-new Lion King, I loved how John gave JD and I just a bunch of freedom, and especially Pharrell and Hans. We also had a lot of freedom in the booth. He was like, you can riff or do whatever, you know, just make it fun. And it was awesome, and I wasn't used to that, but it was still amazing. So I love that.
And can I say that was the easiest, quickest casting I've ever had?
Really?
Yes, Sarah Finn. I was like, give me a list, you know, because we put lists together. There was one person on the list for Young Nala. And I was like, okay, done. Okay, move on. Because remember, all of these performers who sing in the movie sing. Like, they're really good singers who really prepared. Seth had Hans and Pharrell there as his corner men. And by the way, love your voice in it. It's character. It's beautiful. It's some of my best stuff. I love it. You closed the show on Can You Feel the Love Tonight? I
mean, someone had to.
And he will also close this press conference because we're officially out of time. I do apologize that we couldn't get to more audience questions, but I do want to thank every. Oh, well, go ahead. Go ahead. Somebody.
Say, sing us out, Seth. Can you give Seth a microphone? 2, 3, 4. Beyonce, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, thank you. I want to thank the cast and the filmmakers of The Lion King for spending time at the press conference, and thank you guys again. Really appreciate it.